House will come to order. We're at that order of business reports from standing committees.
House Bill 21, introduced by Representative Barbuto, an act relating to crimes and offenses, battery against a family member. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Throne. No, Brechtel, Nicholas, Peasley. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. House Joint Resolution Number 2, introduced by Representative Croker. And a joint resolution requesting the Congress to submit to the states a proposed amendment to the United States Constitution requiring a balanced budget except in times of war or declared national emergency. This bill was referred to Committee Number 3, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Camel, Childers, Madden, Miller, Peterson, Semlek, Ronish, excused, Goggles, signed, representing Childers, Chairman. House Bill 100, introduced by Representative Shepperson, an act relating to game and fish regarding land acquisition. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, was referred House Bill 110, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen in the South Gallery, I want to introduce one of my good friends and one of our former legislators who did an outstanding job representing her constituents. She has also brought with her today her sons Patrick and Matthew, and then a Brazilian exchange student, Vivi. So, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Lori Millen.
We're at that order of business, adoption of rules. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This morning, before we had debate, we sought rulings on parliamentary process. And we had a ruling from our staff that you could not amend a joint rule. Well, the Senate didn't amend their joint rule. They issued a corrected copy. So they have proposed an amended joint rule number 22. It contains most of the changes that the Senate wants and few that the House wants. The Senate didn't want, or it was clear that the Senate didn't want the change represented or provided by the good representative from Carbon County. And so we have in front of us as Joint Rule 22, a corrected copy, a rule. And then if we do not pass that one because it does not contain the amendment desired by the good representative from Carbon County, then we have proposed House Rule 32. So the process is that we move to amend or we move to adopt the rules, then we offer up the committee report, which is Joint Rule 22, corrected copy. If that's defeated, then if the good representative from Carbon County wants to move House Rule 32, he could do that as follows. So with that all being said, I move that the House rules and joint rules previously adopted as a temporary rules of the House of Representatives of the 61st Legislature be adopted, together with any amendments approved by the House, as the permanent rules of the House of Representatives of the 61st Legislature.
Are you done with your explanation of the amendment, or would you just like to move it and vote?
Mr. Chairman, after you've heard the motion, I would move the amendment. And I would move the adoption of Joint Rule Amendment Number 1 to create Joint Rule 22. This is the same amendment that I discussed this morning with those corrected copy things that the Senate added. There are three corrected copy things that the Senate added that are not amendments, although they look like them. At the end of paragraph A, they added the language, upon receipt, a copy of the complaint shall be provided to the member against whom the complaint is filed, providing for notice to the member of the complaint immediately. Then in lines 13 and 14 and 15 on the first page, instead of the language we originally had in the amendment, they added section 797.4 out of Mason's manual, which says essentially the same thing, although it's right out of Mason's manual. And then on the last page, in line 32, they changed the reports from the majority floor leader to the constitutional elective offices, the Senate Vice President and the House Speaker Pro Tem. They did not accept the change or the proposed change to remove the executive session language because at the early stage they didn't want people's names to be drug through the mud by those people who would drag people's names through the mud, and so left that out of the joint rule. And so that, Mr. Speaker, is joint rule number 22.
You've heard the motion on the temporary rule. Anyone else for their first time? Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you for that good explanation of the process and the indulgence of leadership that we could perhaps weigh in on what I would call an important policy decision coming out of what is very often referred to as the People's House. And clearly this is, we're going to speak loudly with this policy decision. And we all know we make the laws, and what we say here today will guide us and our state into the future. Just so there's no mistake, I want everyone to know for sure what I'm trying to tell you here. I would like us all to vote down this joint rule that's been moved by our majority floor leader so that then we can adopt the House rule that recognizes the intention that I would like to send, the voice I'd like to send to the people of this state, that we take seriously our duty, our obligation to conduct the business of the people in an open forum. Now, of course, we have left in the House rule, and of course this is in the joint rule as well, and this is in paragraph B, a process will be left in place where our leadership will be able to look at a written complaint, formal complaint, and make a decision whether or not the facts bear out a continuance of a process to a higher degree, basically to say if this is a frivolous accusation. And there are no statements in that paragraph that says whether or not this has to be in an open meeting or not. Clearly, though, when we appoint a special subcommittee, that business will be conducted by a meeting that will be called to order, the pounding of the gavel, so to speak. And of course, for me, when I look at that duty, that responsibility, when we call a meeting to order and people are making a decision that clearly affects the lives of the people of Wyoming, This should be conducted in an open forum. So what you will see if we do in fact vote down the joint rule being proposed, and then that we will then have an opportunity after that to move the House rule, it would be shown on page 2. On little 4, that all meetings of the council subcommittee will be open to the public. And before, down at the bottom of that page in little I, the special committee was already in both rules that all meetings of that committee will be open to the public. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I would then leave that for other discussion. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also rise and ask you to vote down this joint rule in favor of the one that you also have, just the House rule, for very similar reasons. And while our good colleagues on the other side of the building may be concerned, and I think it was said that they're concerned about names being out there and being made public, obviously there's nothing to preclude the person who files the complaint from taking that to any form of media that they would wish to at the very front end. And we did leave, as you can see on page 1, line 16 through 18, that the presiding officer, with consultation with the majority and minority floor leaders, can summarily dismiss any complaint that is frivolous or committed or submitted for any improper purpose. So we do have that protection on the very front end. But I think we send a very wrong message if we say then that if these officers decide that there does need to be some sort of further bringing together, that we're going to make that an executive session. I think that sends a really, I personally would never want any complaint against me to go into an executive session. I think that would send a very wrong message to my constituents and the people that I represent, and certainly the state. I want it to be done open. I want my name open, and I want it done and open. And I'd ask this body, we are the people's house, to vote this down. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time? Second time. Question being called. Oh, wait, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This isn't one I'll fall on my sword on, but I do want everybody to know the arguments for the process. This isn't a process that's unheard of in the law. Where these determinations are just a determination of probable cause, whether there's just some reasonable suspicion to go forward. After that, it's a very open, very detailed, very specific process. And if the affected legislator wants to release that information, it can all be released. So remember that the reason that this process is here is to avoid a tool for abuse. And so what this process does is it protects us all from abuse by folks who have a political agenda different than ours. So just when you vote on this rule, keep that in consideration.
The sponsor of the amendment goes last. Any other speakers are out of order? I asked for the second time already. Question being called on the amendment, the corrected copy, amendment number 1 to the joint rules. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oh, you know what? I messed it up. We have to have a roll call vote on that. I apologize. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger. Blake.
No.
Blickery.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles excused. Greer.
Aye.
Green.
No.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic.
No.
Croker. Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart. Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Bird. Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 40 ayes, 19 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted amendment number 1 to the joint rules. Are there any other amendments to come before the body? Now we're on the motion to adopt the temporary rules as the permanent rules as amended. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds. Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles excused. Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted the temporary House and joint rules of the 61st legislature as amended as the permanent rules of the 61st Wyoming legislature. We are at that order of business, election contest, House District 45. The reading clerk will read the report.
Mr. Speaker, your special committee appointed to hear the election contest for House District 45 respectfully reports back to the House as follows. Based upon findings set out in Attachment A, it is the recommendation of the special committee that the election for House District 45 be rejected and that Matthias Green be determined qualified to serve as the representative for House District 45. Ayes, Camel, Yagi, Croker, Lubno, Peterson, Stubson. No, Barbudo, Byrd, Illaway. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the report. What is your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, based upon the Special Committee's report and recommendation, I move that the House of Representatives vote to reject the election contest relating to House District 45 and thereby determine that Matthias Green is qualified to serve as the representative for House District 45.
You've heard the motion, and pursuant to Joint Rule 15, the motion is subject to limited debate. If you look at Rule 15, the rules are such that debate on the motion is limited as follows. No member may speak more than twice on the motion, and no member shall occupy the floor more than 5 minutes each time that he or she speaks. And there are no extensions of time under this rule. You cannot yield your time to someone else. Once we begin deliberations on this motion, we shall not adjourn until the matter is decided. We have a quorum present, and a majority of the members of the House of Representatives who are present may vote on the motion. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my comments on this motion are in no way to be construed to be against anybody in the military. And to be perfectly clear, Representative Green's service to the military has been exemplary, and I deeply appreciate his service to our country. However, that being said, these proceedings really had very little to do with his service to our country. Last Friday, ladies and gentlemen, the report of the Special Committee was handed out to you. You also received the form that we all signed for nomination. Representative Green found out he was to be deployed in April of 2009, and you'll notice this on page 2, paragraphs 8 and 9. The only reason he stored his goods where he did was that it was close to downtown, it was inexpensive, and he received a discount. And you'll notice that on paragraph 9. In November 2009, he read an article, and I believe he was deployed at that time. He read an article about Representative Carson, and he considered to run against him. He was in Afghanistan at the time. The record goes on about his correspondence with the Secretary of State, but he had actually no residence in House District 45. Now, some of us have confused voting and running for the legislature. Matthias Green is a resident of the state of Wyoming. When he came back from Afghanistan, he can vote wherever he wants to light. But under our Constitution, it says you must be a resident of that district for a year. On page 3, you'll notice that number 25, after correspondence with the Secretary of State, he filed for office, but he never did reside in House District 45. On page 7 of the report, the fifth paragraph, thus under the AG's opinion, Mr. Green at the time his active military service resumed on or about May 27, 2009, needed to be a resident with an actual habitation in House District 45 and the intent to run to that resident, to return to that resident. At the time he left for training in Canada, he had no current habitation in House District 45. The Attorney General opinion does not allow Mr. Green to declare a residency in House District 45. Along with the report you were handed out was the application for nomination by party primacy. Please note the paragraph with the blanks that must be filled in and the term residing at. And the qualifications for office section is on the reverse side. The next to last paragraph on page 8, the difficulty is here that Mr. Green appears to have had no current habitation when he left Laramie for his military training. It is undisputed, however, his last address at the time of his departure for training was in House District 13. Either this address was his current habitation for purposes of the statute, as suggested by the AG's opinion, or he had no current habitation. Either way, we cannot revise the statute to fit the facts of Mr. Green's unique circumstances. Mr. Green made the choice to relinquish his residence, not find a new one, and place his possessions in storage rather than in a residence. And I remind you about the storage. It just happened to be in House District 45. It didn't have to be. There are other storage places in Laramie. But it was cheap. He got a military discount.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you would, I thought it would be very good for us if we would look at this paper that I've handed out. This is a timeline, and I think it would be very helpful for you as I go down through each one of these little boxes to put a date on there and a number so you can follow through this sheet and reference it to this sheet so you will have some of the facts of where he lived. This came from mainly the second day of testimony, and I was very glad that we were able to get this because the first day it was very fuzzy to me. Also, if you look at this, this is the timeline down here on the bottom, these longer boxes or longer rectangles. That tells you where he was at this time, and then above that gives you a little bit of the timeline. So let me kind of hurriedly go through there. The first box right by 209 is number 17, and this was March, April of 09. The second box is number 8, and that is April of 09. He got his notice to deploy. The next one, move the items, is number 910. That was in May of 09. And that's, he moved these items from 13 into 14. The next one, training in Canada, is number 12. That was May 27th of 09. The next one, the lease in 611 Mitchell. This is where he was living. Was terminated. There were no keys, no mail, no access to that one. And that is May 25th of 09. The next one in Cheyenne for one night is number 13. Camp Guernsey training is number 14. Colorado Springs high altitude training is number 15. That's July of 09. Called to Cheyenne for dispatch, that's number 16, and that's August 2nd of 09. Mobilized to Fort Sill, that's number 17, August 5th of 09. And deployed to Salerno, Afghanistan was number 18, that was September 17th of 09. And then all of the things from underneath arrive in Afghanistan on September 18th of 09, he did. And number 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, as you can read, are while he was in Salerno in Afghanistan. And then if we will switch over to the next one, He moved into 115 each grand. That goes clear to number 30, and that happened on 7-2 of 10. And he spent some nights. Now, this is when he came home. Spent one night at 1207 Boswell. That's number 27. And we've already said return to Afghanistan was June. That's number 26. We already referred to that from Afghanistan. That was June 17th. And then the next one, he stayed in Fort Collins. That's 28, 29. He stayed at 209 Boswell. And then you go back up to number 30, where he moved in to 115 East Grand. Number 31, I think, is one of the big things to me, the very last one that you have on your paper. This was the election day that we were all very glad to have come and get over. And with all of the press, with all the radio, television, newspaper, interviews with going on within House District 45, he was unanimously chosen as the representative. Representative Green was as the representative for House District 45. So I think the voters knew about that, and they overwhelmingly voted him in with all this. And I hope this timeline, as we go through the other discussions, will help you a little bit, and then refer to this sheet. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having served on the special committee, I wanted to kind of share my thought process with the floor on how I reached the decision that I did and what ran through my mind, and kind of want to preface it that I'm not a lawyer, and so I kind of approach things more not looking for a technical legal definition, but kind of the common sense scenario of what, you know, what makes sense, what is reasonable and prudent for somebody in his situation to expect from him. Going into it towards the end, one thing that came out that I thought that was very important is the gentleman who brought the challenge to the residency requirement. He had the option of filing in court and challenging this in court before the election. And not only before the election, but after the immediately after the election, before the results were certified. When asked why he did not choose to go that route, he testified that he wanted to respect the election process. For me, part of respecting the election process is respecting the results and the will of the people. So he chose not to go about this challenge in court, but bring it to the body. An argument that I've really heard against or in favor of the challenge and against seating the good representative from Laramie is that it would open the floodgates to all kinds of loose interpretations or people from out of state wanting to come in and poach a race. And I don't think that applies at all, because the state constitution and the statute specifically mention exemptions for military service. A few things that were brought out is all sides agreed on the fact that he was a resident of Wyoming. There was no doubt as to the fact he was a resident of Wyoming. The question was, during his time in Afghanistan, where was he a resident? His lease was expired before he shipped out. He had begun to look for property in his new house district, had shown an intent to move there. The only thing that prevented him from signing a lease was he got his papers from the military assigning him a new place to live for a year over in Afghanistan, along with a few other stops for training. And I had to ask myself, what is fair to expect from those fine military men and women who are supporting us? Is it reasonable to expect them to pay for an apartment they're not going to live in for a year or not? And in my mind, he did the reasonable thing, and that was he moved all of his property to the district he intended to move in. And I think that intent is not the only thing that matters, but it does matter. The statutes that have to do with this, and specifically have to do with military members, mention intent more than one time. So intent obviously is a factor. We had precedent with Representative Prosser in the late 60s and early 70s. Through some technicalities, his house was in Wyoming. Or was in Colorado, but he was elected in Wyoming. His children had gone to Wyoming schools. He had acted as a Wyoming resident, and it was ruled by the House then that the common sense thing was he was indeed, his intent was to be a resident, and the technicality of him living slightly across the border where the majority of his property was in Wyoming, they ruled he was a resident of Wyoming. So precedence has been found for using common sense. And I guess for me it kind of came down to, if there is a little bit of gray area, if I'm going to err one way or the other, I'm going to err on the side of siding with the will of the people who elected the representative, and I'm going to err on the side of protecting and standing for those military members who serve for us. So I would urge you to vote to reject the challenge and seat the representative.
Representative Madden, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't have an opinion right now on this, but, you know, I spent the weekend reading through these opinions, both the prevailing opinion and the dissenting opinion, and then also the Attorney General's analysis of it at the end. And I'm trying to see how, you know, with the same set of facts, you've got, you know, a subset of the committee voting one way and the subset of the other remaining ones voting the other way. And as I look at this, the primary difference in the thrust of the comments of the dissenting opinion seem to put more credibility on the analysis, the opinion of the Attorney General and the reference back to the Constitution that he made and so on. And I think that's important. But the question I have for people who still have some time left, to explain to us what place the Attorney General's opinion had in both sides of this. That's really where I'm at. And I think that's important. I think that you know, if the Attorney General's opinion is not valid, then we need to discuss that a little bit, too. Thank you.
Representative Barbuto, for your first time.
Mr. Speaker, speaking a first time in order to speak a second.
Representative Stubson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'll try to respond to the good representative from Johnson County's questions a little bit. The problem with relying exclusively, as the dissent has done, really, on the Attorney General's opinion, is that this is an opinion that's done before any of the facts are known, before we're able to see both sides of the facts, before we're able to see both sides of the argument. And so you do get a snapshot and maybe a little bit of insight, but you don't get the whole story. And that's really the problem with the Attorney General's report, because it relies really on select provisions of the Constitution. And when we look at this question, you really have to look at the whole Constitution and the body of law in order to be able to make a decision. And you can't take one portion of the Constitution and then throw it out the door to the exclusion of another. And I'll tell you a little bit what I mean. And the good representative from Laramie County said, you know, this doesn't have anything really to do with representative from Albany County's military service, but it really does. And the reason it does is not because we have great appreciation for that service, and it's not because we have great appreciation for our military in general. It's because it has constitutional significance. And this, if you look at Article 6, Section 7 of the Constitution, it specifically provides, our forefathers provided, that when somebody's serving in the military of the United States, they don't lose residence in the state of Wyoming. They don't cease to be elector, meaning they have to be rooted to a place in the state of Wyoming. And this is a provision that you don't see anywhere in the dissenting opinion. This is a provision that you don't see focused on at all in the Attorney General's opinion. But it has to be read and in concert with the residency requirements in order for us to become to a truly constitutional decision. And so what you have is Representative Green is a resident of Wyoming. Is he a representative of House District 13, the district to which he has severed all contact? He has no place. He has a right to walk into in that district. He has no intent, and this was undisputed. He had no intent of ever going back to House District 13 because he'd been looking to move to downtown for several months before his deployment. And so we have a situation that, but for those deployment orders, we know from the testimony before us that Representative Green would have been a resident of House District 45 as of June 1st, 2009. We know that from the testimony. There was no contradiction to that testimony. And in light of this constitutional provision, then, we can't simply say, okay, we're going to make him stay as a resident of House District 13 when he had no intention to ever return to that district. And that brings me to the other key piece of the Attorney General's opinion, and that's this residency definition that he relies so heavily upon in 22.1102. Recognize they rely heavily on this defined word residency, and we who draft laws know if you're going to use a definition in a statute, you use the defined word. But we don't say you have to have a residence within the district. We say you have to have a resident. If we were going to use all these requirements under residence, we would have included that word, that defined word, but we didn't do that. The other problem with the reliance on it is that it's a two-part requirement, current habitation and an intent to return. You have to have both of those to have a residence. The Attorney General says, well, we'll just put him in House District 13, but there's no dispute. He had no intent to ever return to House District 13. So if you're going to live and die by this statute, you cannot come to the conclusion that he was a resident of House District 13. Instead, you really have to look at resident, not a definition that we're not even using, and conclude that given all the facts, it is most logical, as between those two districts, that this that Representative Green was a resident of House District 45 and duly qualified to run for election.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And with all due respect to my very articulate colleague from District 56, I'm going to use the same facts and come out on the opposite end. So I urge you to reject the committee recommendation vote and to sustain the complaint. In order to run for office, you need to be eligible. And to be eligible means to be a resident for a year. And what does that mean? It's a place to rest your head. On page 6, if you'll turn to page 6 of our handout, residence is the place where a person has a current habitation into which, whenever he is absent, he has the intention of returning. So the question for us is, where was Mr. Green's residency in January of 2010, 1 year before seating? His residency was in Afghanistan, where he was serving us and our nation, and for which all of us are deeply grateful. Our statutes make a very explicit carve-out exception for serving in the military and says that a person should not gain or lose residency. As point number 22 of the finding of facts point out, and again, that's on page 3. Mr. Green checked with the Secretary of State's office in February of 2010, one month after the one-year tolling begins. As you can see with point number 22, on February 19th, 2010, Mr. Green received electronic correspondence from the Wyoming Secretary of State's office stating that according to the Wyoming statewide voter registration system, Mr. Green was still a registered voter of House District 13, and that being the case, the Wyoming Secretary of State's office would not approve an application of nomination for Wyoming House District 45. I believe that Mr. Green had every right to run for office, but in House District 13, that his residency at 611 Mitchell, combined with his military service, gave him such an opportunity. He need not maintain a lease. He need not maintain anything. But the combination of his last home as well as his military service gave him the opportunity to run in House District 13, and it's my belief that Mr. Green should have run against me. All right. To rule otherwise opens up too much flawed interpretation down the road of eligibility to run. Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having served on the committee, I certainly urge the body here to reject this and seat the good representative. And I'd like to just elaborate to the reasonings behind that. I'm a retired military officer, spent many times on deployments and what happened, what the military does, and how things work. And if I can direct your attention to page number one, item number 10. Let's focus there for a bit. On May 25th, Major Green placed all of his worldly possessions in a storage facility within House District 45. Why did he do that? Because he was told by the military, get your affairs in order, you're going to be deployed, and you're going to have numerous things happen to you. That's pre-deployment training, you're going to have shots, you're going to have all kinds of things that take place here. So get things in order. Look at the items that are there that was placed. That is his residence. That was his intent. The whole work took place there. Why didn't he rent an apartment? It would have been extremely foolish from numerous perspectives. One, the cost. Two, he may not return, because in the profession of arms, there are three things that can happen to one when you go into a war zone. One, KIAs, WIAs, and POWs is what can happen. So you don't know. Next thing, you have a utilities, you have a lease type thing. And if any of you live in Laramie, Wyoming, you have to have utilities. So he's going to have these things, plus possible vandalism takes place to his possessions. So he went into this facility. It happens all the time in the military. I have done it myself on different occasions before deployment to various requirements and necessary goes forward. I look at three things when we started evaluating this whole thing. One was intent. I don't think there's any question the intent is here. His house is here. He's complying with military orders, which was compliance. And the third thing is affirmative acts. He's deployed. Let's look at page two. Items 12 through 26 is full of affirmative acts that took place while he was deployed into the theater. He's a commander of a medevac unit, and what he has to do is numerous things associated with the mission. The mission has to be accomplished, but while he's doing that, he takes these affirmative acts to express his intent. One, he contacts the source of where decisions are made. What is my eligibility? And that's the Secretary of State's office. Look through there. There was telephone calls, there were emails, there were lots of things there. What about 45? He files from Afghanistan. In 45, there wasn't any question on his intent, wasn't any question on what he did and how he took place. Those events all transpired. But for his deployment, we wouldn't be here today. There's no question about that. He returns back to the United States here, as you can see, is laid out here. He spends several days in a recovery mode. I can assure you, you do have recovery mode, the experiences you had. And then he finds an apartment in House District 45, which was continuation of what he was doing before he went into the storage unit. So with that, fellow representatives, I unquestionably recommend that we seat this representative.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for my first time, that I can have a second time.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, a big thank you to the special committee. Really appreciate all their hard work, and this is a well-put-together document. I see our role. The facts have already been garnered for us by the special committee, so I take it that our role is to determine the conclusions of law. And so to do that, I look at the definition, and this is more of a question because I haven't actually made up my mind yet, but I'm just curious if the committee had looked much at, and you can see it in the Attorney General's opinion, I think is where they state it the longest, on page 4 of the Attorney General's opinion, he's just quoting from the statute, but there's this C in there, and it just simply says, a person shall not lose his residence by leaving his home to go to another state, another district of this state, or to another country for temporary purposes with the intent of returning. And then the important part, it has a comma, if he has not registered in the other state, district, or country. Now, I certainly understand there's this other exemption for military service. I was just wondering if they had looked at C, too, because C seems to also go to this, but the dispositive issue in C is, that you remain in the district of which you left until such time as you register in the next district. Because it says if he has not registered in the other state. Well, clearly he didn't go to another state. And he didn't go to another, well, he did go to another country, but he didn't register in that country. But the one left there is a district. So when I go back and look at the facts show me that he registered to vote, and I think that's the important part is the registration. He registers to vote on April 5th, 2010. So the way I look at it is April 5th, 2010 is when he truly became a resident of House District 45. I follow that with the majority opinion that as of April 5th, he was clearly a resident of House District 45. And I go with that under C, is where I got that from. What I'm having difficulty is from April 5th, 2010 backwards to get to that full year. So from April back, I guess to the, I guess you got to get back a few more months. And actually, I'm not real sure where you count from. I assume you count from November 2nd of 2009. That was just my curiosity question. If the committee had looked much at C and see if C was determinative, because if this was not a military member, that's where we would be looking, and then we would clearly have an issue there. Just a question if for what someone on the committee.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If this question were easy to answer, we wouldn't have to answer it. And so please keep an open mind. I started this process with a fairly closed mind. My initial opinion after reading the Attorney General's opinion was that didn't put his head there, he's out. I will tell you that Attorney General's opinion was issued before the election. It was issued before the hearing and without the benefit of the evidence that we heard in the hearing. And it carries with it the same prejudgment that I carried into the hearing. If you look at our statute, it says residence is a place where a person has a current habitation and then the disjunctive and to which whenever he is absent, he has the intention of returning. Well, it's clear that the good representative from Albany County did not reside in House District 13. He turned in the keys. He terminated the lease. He ceased any residence. He didn't even have any property in House District 13. He had no legal right to enter any structure in House District 13 other than public structures. He was absolutely not a resident of House District 13. And had he run for House District 13, I submit to you, brothers and sisters of the 61st, we'd be going through the same thing that we're going through now. So, if he's not a resident of 13, our Constitution says he has to reside somewhere. He is a Wyoming elector, and he's got to be somewhere. Well, it's also equally clear that he was not a resident of Forward Operating Base Salerno in Afghanistan, where he put his head on the pillow, where he was commanding a medevac unit. So if he's a Wyoming resident, where is his intent according to the purpose of the statute? The testimony is all uncontradicted from the time he started looking for an apartment to the place that he had the most contacts with, where he stored his stuff, House District 45. Well, why is that important and why is that testimony important? If you look at our Joint Rule 15B3, it says the burden of proof is on the contestant to prove the grounds. What does that mean? That means that the good representative from Albany County doesn't have to prove he lived in House District 45 or was an elector in House District 45. It means that the contestant has to prove that he did not. And there was no testimony in any way, shape, or form that there was any intent to reside anywhere else, that there were any contacts anywhere else, or that he was anywhere other than in the military or in House District 45 prior to the election. This is not a case where all of the statutes match up, but we have an obligation as a body to make sure that we honor all of our constitutional provisions. And those constitutional provisions are the qualification for an elector and also honoring those who serve in our military. And to my way of thinking, if you have to give a benefit of doubt, you give the benefit of doubt to the uncontradicted testimony that the person who's commanding a medevac unit at Forward Operating Base Salerno in Afghanistan, that he intended to return, as our statute requires, to House District 45. And that's why I urge you to reject this election challenge and to seat Representative Green.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for my first time in order to reserve a second time.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question. First, I would like to refute one thing the good majority leader just said. If he had run in District 13, I'm not sure that we can say that we'd be having this right now, because I'm well aware of how hard the representative from District 13 campaigns and works, even when she's uncontested. So if that was slighted at you at all, I would apologize on behalf of the body. But my question, which I seem to not understand from the report and the testimonies from District 56 and 31, is there always seems to be this question of either or. He either has to be a resident of District 13 or District 45. And I don't find that in the Constitution and our statutes. We have a lot of mention you retain your residency of Wyoming. And I may be one of the few districts that has homeless people decide to vote in my district on election day, because under Wyoming law, you can declare whatever district you want to vote in if you're homeless and can prove you're homeless on that day, because you retain your state residency, but you don't retain a district residency. So someone could explain why it is an either-or that he has to be a resident of one of those districts, and why we can't just say he was a resident of Wyoming without having a clear distinction of which district he was in would really help me out. Thanks.
Representative Peasley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm one question, mainly just to reserve my right to come back. Of those on the committee, was much consideration given to the significance of not being exactly in your district? The whole concept of residency had to do with being a member of the community, having your kids go to the same school, going to the same church, same county commissioners, same school district and teachers, same city officials. And once the Supreme Court told us we weren't smart enough to draw our own lines and made us draw them according to population, now the people across the alley are in a different district. I don't know a lot of the people in my district because it meanders according to a computer program. And it just seems to me that it isn't, I understand the law is the law, but was any consideration given to the fact that we've kind of dumbed this whole thing down by just drawing arbitrary lines, and we don't, when we're elected in the community anymore, have a sense of community? I understand it between states, but I guess I haven't felt that strength of loyalty to my district that I used to feel when we drew the lines in accordance with what we'd recognized as historical boundaries. Just a thought. Thank you.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This body was charged with a full and fair due diligence to respond to a challenge of an election. They spent quality time looking at all of the evidence, and they came to a 2-to-1 decision that the elected representative from House District 45 should be seated. I just want to refresh everybody's thought that we gave full and fair due diligence to the question, and that's where this group of 9 legislators found themselves, and to also reserve a spot for a second communication.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The thing that I am trying to clear up in my own mind is the definition of residence and whether or not we are legally bound to the definition of residence in our statutes, or if There has been some court decision at some point in time that would allow us to maybe interpret that definition differently. And so I would really like somebody, one of the good legal scholars in the room, to maybe give me a reason why maybe we could use a different definition of residence. Because under the definition of residence that we have to go by, that's in the statute, I'm really struggling.
Representative Dave's wanted, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question concerns what was brought to us earlier. When he put his stuff into storage in May, how do we assume which district he's going to? If District 13 is not the one he's going back to, how do we naturally make the assumption that he's going to 45? Now, as you read the testimony in November of 9th, when he read an article about the former representative, that was the first time that he had intentions of which district he was coming back to. So he's maintained his Wyoming residency, but if somebody can help me connect that time frame, that when he left 13, that there's some way that you can determine which district he was going to. As I read this, Mr. Speaker, the first time I see any of intention of which district he wants to come back to is somewhere in November. I don't know that it was November 9th, but in November when he read a newspaper article. Thank you.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My problem with, and I'm not the legal scholar that was requested over here to answer this question. I sort of have the same question. Starting at page 5 of the opinion, the majority opinion, with the words, at the very last three words, the Attorney General relied primarily on the definition of, quote, residence, as that term is defined in Wyoming Statute Section 22-1-102A-XXX. That definition refers to a place of actual habitation. However, that term is not used to define a person's eligibility for election. Instead, the legislature chose a different word, quote, resident, to describe the eligibility requirement. So what is being suggested is that the Attorney General looked at the wrong section, because that was a definition of residence. What I'm looking for is the definition of resident, which is the standard applicable here. In the opinion of the majority, the legal standard, at least I can't find it, and I'd ask somebody to point it out to me, what is the definition of resident if it's dissimilar to the definition of residence? Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? First time. Anyone for their second time? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for my second time. Along with the report that was handed out to you was a single sheet. The single sheet says federal and state offices application for nomination by party primary. Before filing this application, please see reverse side for qualifications for office. I ask you to look at the back. It says state representative, and it says must be at least 21 years old, U.S. citizen, qualified elector, resided in the district from which elected at least 12 months next preceding his election. In any general election year in which a legislative, well, we won't go into the reapportionment. The paragraph on the first page says, I swear or affirm that I was born on such and such a date, that I have been a resident of the state of Wyoming since, and that I am a registered voter of election district number in precinct number, residing at, in the county of. Then it asks for your signature, and it says residence address. It was brought up that a member of this body from Newcastle might not have been able to qualify, but it doesn't say that. He resides where he was elected from, but he might have been his residence address or his mailing address might have been the University of Wyoming. So reside is where you have your, where you are going to be elected from, the election district, and the precinct that I'm a registered voter of, where you're a registered voter of, and where you reside. We just want to make sure that when you think about voting and you think about being a legislator, voting, as my good friend on my right-hand side said, you can vote anywhere. You're a resident of Wyoming. But to run for legislature takes a year. Thank you. And I thank the committee for its hard work.
Anyone else for their second time? Second time. You ready for the question? Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm just sitting here thinking or listening to all the emphasis that's put on our Attorney General's opinion. And we have an Attorney General, but I'd like to point out one thing that has not been pointed out. Our past Attorney General was representing Representative Green. So here we have one Attorney General saying one thing, and here we have another Attorney General on totally the opposite side representing Representative Green. And again, I'd like another point I'd just like to reiterate with all of the things and going back to what one of the representatives said with the arbitrary lines that are drawn, with all of the information out to the voters of House District 45 about the election, is he here, is he not here, where is he a resident of, they elected him overwhelmingly for House District 45. Thank you.
Representative Byrd, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the things discussed here today is intent. Intent without commitment is not intent. The elected official from House District 45, as he testified in front of the committee on which I sat, spoke of intent, but in looking at this intent, there is no basis, no commitment to this intent. If one wanted to show content, one would have pursued a lease of some sort. One would have went out and searched and gained some sort of toehold in that district besides what his testimony said that where he stored his goods was because of two factors, one being it was military discount and the other it was the nicest storage unit in Laramie. The commitment here is that an individual who is seriously about intent to return to someplace will perform due diligence. I was a student in Laramie and taking classes there in the spring semester. You have to perform due diligence. There are not a lot of places to live in Laramie. So getting a place, a residence, is not a difficult thing to do. According to the timetable, the elected official had plenty of time to secure those things. And in my opinion, the commitment to the intent to live in that district is just not shown here. Thank you.
Representative Croker, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to address a question that came up that was asked by one of our fine members of the body, and I don't remember who asked it, but it was asked when was the first time he showed intent to move into the district, and that individual hadn't seen intent until he read the newspaper article in November. Part of the testimony that was not in dispute was that Representative Green began looking for a place in House District 45 in downtown. He wanted to move to downtown Laramie, actually met with a real estate agent and had done a lot of work on the ground looking for a place to live and was preparing to to find a place to live when he received his orders, and at that point was when he stopped pursuing looking for a place in House District 45 and instead went to Afghanistan. And it's been suggested by those in favor of the challenge that there would have been no issue if he had just leased a place or put his name on a lease while he was gone, but his lease would have begun before he had a chance, or after he had a chance to live in it. And in my mind, it just violates all principles of common sense to say that renting an empty building that meets the requirement of an apartment or a house where he would never set foot for a year is much different than moving his possessions into a storage unit, which is a building in that residence. So I believe he established his intent early.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and fellow members of the 61st, I guess the one thing that I really do not want you to forget in this proceeding is that according to Rule 15, Joint Rules, the burden of proof was on the contestant. It was not on the legislator who got elected. And I still have heard nothing on this floor that contradicts any of the statements of facts that were brought forward. So I just ask you, in this, the burden of proof, I don't believe, in my mind, based on what I have read, was never met by the contestant to prove that he was actually not a resident of House District 45. And that really, that's a major part of our rule. The burden of proof was on the contestant. It was not on the legislator that was ultimately elected from House District 45. And from my take on what I've read and what I've heard here today, the burden of proof was not met. And I think based on that, the only conclusion that we can come to in this body, in my mind, is to reject the contested election. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barbuto, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll try to be brief. This subject of intent has come up a lot today, and it came up a lot during the hearing. There's no doubt that Rep. Green had a desire to live in downtown Laramie. He had talked about wanting to live in downtown Laramie and had even sought after the services of a realtor to live in downtown Laramie. But during the testimony and today or any other time, I've never heard anybody say that there was a guarantee that Representative Green was going to move into House District 45. I was a college student once. A lot of you were too. And I think that when you're deciding where to live, there's some things you factor in. First of all, availability of space. If you can afford it, if it's economic for you to move in, or if it's convenient in other ways, travel, what have you. So there was never a guarantee he was going to move into House District 45. I would concede that it's obvious his intent was to return to Wyoming. His intent was probably even to return to Laramie. But there was no guarantee that he was going to move back into House District 45. Now, I join a lot of you in stating that it's obvious that Representative Green is competent, he's intelligent, and in any other circumstances, he would be a wonderful representative. He's able to serve in that sense. But he is not eligible based on the residency requirements. Now, I know it sounds crazy to rent an apartment that may be empty or to lease space you're not going to live in, but not doing that is a consequence. There's a consequence associated with that. One is that you're going to be fiscally conservative. You're going to save some money. That's great. I think we'd all do that. We'd all hope we'd do that. But the other consequence is that if you don't return and you're not 12 months out from the requirement date for eligibility, then you are ineligible to run for office. And I think that's a fact. I get nervous when we start interpreting things like constitution and statutes. I know when I run bills here, I'm not thinking, oh, I wonder how they're going to interpret this in 25 or 30 years. No, I think it's pretty set straight out what our intent was in that statute when those bills that we ran. It just seems ludicrous to me that we do this, that we interpret bills. And when we start interpreting the Constitution, that really scares me. And I know a lot of you came here as constitutionalists, as did I. And as a previous speaker stated, he said, in a time of uncertainty, I'm going to err on the side of voters and in our fine military. Well, ladies and gentlemen of the 61st, I'm going to err on the side of the Constitution, and I know I'm safe in doing that. I would vote that you sustain this election contest.
Representative Gingrey for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I bring us back to the facts have been decided for us as to burden of proof and those type of things. That was done at the committee level. Our role is to determine the conclusions of law. And when you take to the law, there is only one thing to look at primarily, and that's that definition of residence. I certainly appreciate the majority opinion's distinction between resident and residence, but the entire opinion of the majority is completely hinged on that argument. So if you buy that argument that there is a distinction between the word residence and resident or reside, then that's fine. I think they're all derivatives of the same word. So I look to the definition of residence. And when you look at that definition, it says a person shall not gain or lose residence merely by reason of his presence or absence. So clearly, by going to Afghanistan, you don't lose your residency, nor do you gain, but you don't lose it. Now, if this individual had gone to Afghanistan and then returned to House District 13, I think they would have been fine because you didn't lose your residence in House District 13. Even if you don't have a lease or any relationship anymore to House District 13, you don't lose it because the law says here you don't lose your residency simply because you left because of military service. Plus, you look to subsection C, and subsection C is where you see that the distinction is made, and that's the dispositive part right there. Your residency changes upon your registration in the new district. My only conclusion I can make is that this representative was a resident of House District 13 up until the date of April 5th, 2010. April 5th, 2010 is the date he changes his voter registration to House District 45. According to the law, that's when he changes it. So he's in House District 13 up to April 5th, 2010. Then he's in House District 45 from that point on. That's not a full year prior to the election of November. I'm having difficulty, and you know, maybe someone can convince me otherwise, but I read the statute. I read B. It says, I shall not gain or lose. That means I stay in House District 13. Then in C, it says it changes dispositively when I make that voter registration change. He makes it in April. Other than that, I'm not seeing how you can make the jump to saying that he was already in House District 45 prior to the date of voter registration. I'm certainly still open to being convinced. I'm just not seeing that in the law.
Representative Lubnow for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Constitution requires that we honor our military folks by preserving their rights as an elector. And there's been some argument that you can somehow separate that and have them be a representative of the global set of Wyoming, but not be a resident for purposes of being in a House district. And that's wholly untrue. If you are an elector, you have the rights of all electors, which includes the right to vote for a representative, the right to vote for a senator, and the right to run for office. Now, when you say that you're a resident of all of Wyoming, that denies part of those rights, and you can't separate them. They're all intertwined, and they're inseparable. Now, if you look at the residency statute, it says residence is the place of person's actual habitation. The construction of this term shall be governed by the following rules. A says, residence is the place where the person has a current habitation and to which, whenever he is absent, he has the intention of returning. The clear testimony, and if you look at findings 7 and 9, were that the good representative from Albany County intended to return to House District 45 and severed all of his ties with House District 13. He wanted to live in downtown Laramie in a loft and took all of the steps necessary to do that. Now, the good representative from Teton County said, indeed, a person shall not gain residence in a county if he enters it without, and then the intent of making it his current residence. We talk about intent all the way through that statute. So what was the uncontradicted intent of the good representative from Albany County? He intended to reside in House District 45. And we heard 2 days of testimony that he intended to reside in House District 45, and that was never contradicted, which falls into the analysis from the good representative from the county of the Hot Springs, where it's not the good representative from Albany County's burden to prove that he didn't intend to reside there. It's the burden of proof. It's the burden of proof of the good representative ex-representative challenging this case to prove he didn't reside there. And he didn't have that intent. Where are the places in the state of Wyoming where the good representative from Albany County had the most contacts? The places where he intended to reside, the places where his bed, his kitchen equipment, his bedding, and his television resided. So if you follow that analysis through, there's only one place you can conclude that the good representative resided, and that's the place where he had the contacts, and we are constitutionally obligated to honor that. So for the last time on this issue, I urge you all to vote affirmative for the motion and seat the good representative from Albany County.
Representative Stubson, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And just real briefly, that the representative from Sheridan raised the point of, well, resident. Okay, resident is the word used. What's the definition you used? And one of the interesting things we heard, we were talking about the Prosser case from 3 decades ago, and there was a long discussion about there are hundreds of definitions of what residency is, what a resident is, for different things under the statute, all particularly carved out for their specific reasons. You know, we in this body, really, in looking at the Constitution and the fact that you have to be a resident, and looking at the statute and saying you have to be a resident, we get to apply a little bit of common sense. We get to say that's where you lived. And you certainly, it's certainly not where you cut all ties to, a place where a year and a half before you had locked your door, moved your stuff out. We can talk about guarantees, but the fact is all the evidence establishes that the good representative from Albany County was never to return to live in House District 13. So how do you, in common sense, come to the conclusion that that's where we're going to root him for purposes of this election contest? Instead, he moved his possessions to the new district, and again, undisputed, as of June 1st, 2009, if deployment orders hadn't been received, the representative from Albany County would have been laying his head down every night in House District 45. That's a resident of House District 45, and that's why we should vote to reject this election contest.
Anyone else for their second time? Second time. Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and just a couple of points. First, to just say that I truly believe that Mr. Green had every right to run against me in House District 13. And if he won, we would not be having this debate. Okay. In terms of the arguments that were just had, it seems to me that we're missing an important element of the statute, 22-1-102, the element of the statute that talks about residence as current habitation. And again, residence is the place of a person's actual habitation. The construction of this term is governed by the following rules. Residence is the place where a person has a current habitation and to which, whenever he is absent, he has the intention of returning. A person shall not gain or lose residence merely by reason of his presence or absence while one of those is in the military. So you'll see that the statute itself, which is also constitutional, says that current habitation is the definition of residence. Intent is only a portion of it. And the intent that is talked about in the statute is the intent to return, not the intent to move to. And I think that's an important distinction that we haven't made. Thank you.
No one else for their second time in question having been called. The motion is to reject the election contest relating to the election of Matthias Green.
Mr. Speaker, point of order or point of clarification. Could you explain what an aye vote? Were you going to get to that? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The motion is to reject the election contest relating to the election of Matthias Green in House District 45. If you vote aye, you are voting to reject the election contest and that Matthias Green is qualified to serve as the representative for House District 45. A no vote is to sustain the election contest and that Matthias Green is not qualified to serve as the representative for House District 45. Pursuant to Joint Rule 15, the vote required is a majority of the members present. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown. Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles excused. Greer.
Aye.
Green. Green.
Excused.
Green excused. Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton. Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
No.
Vronish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Gingery, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 42 aye, 16 no, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have elected to reject the election contest and have determined that Matthias Green is qualified to serve in House District 45. And pursuant to Joint Rule 15, the action of the House will be reported to the Governor and the Secretary of State.
Mr. Speaker.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
We're going to go with Mr. Speaker.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, pursuant to House Rule 13-6, I'd like to explain my vote on the election contest. First, a bona fide analysis of the contest should not involve anyone's military service, although it's certainly an admirable trait, and I honor that service. However, as a veteran myself, I feel consideration of this factor had no place in my decision, aside, of course, that military status allowing maintenance of residence while absent. Secondly, a bona fide analysis of the contest should not involve political party. Although I'm not a member of the contestants' party, I feel that the integrity of our Constitution, our laws, and our legislature rises above status, affiliation, and personal feelings. Third, a bona fide analysis of the contest should not involve the personalities involved. I have no doubt that the man sworn into this body in whom we have now voted to serve is more than worthy of the task to which he was elected, and I recognize that there may have been warranted criticisms of his predecessor as well. Fourth, although I certainly respect the votes of all cast in the election, the will of the people cannot stand alone without the force of law unless we wish to redefine our republic and our democracy. I just wanted you to know my vote and my decision was based solely on the facts as presented by the committee and the law, only as I understand them and applied to those facts. My analysis was such that I believe an actual residence or habitation had to be established in House District 45, and then in absence, the individual had to have the intention of returning. There's no doubt in my mind there was an intent to return, but I could not come to find in my own mind that there was ever a residence established per statute in House District 45. The individual certainly maintained his Wyoming residency while deployed. That's what the Constitution does for us under Article 6, Section 7. But was not, in my opinion and my analysis, a resident under the election code in House District 45. I wanted you all to know this, and the most important thing I wanted to say was that was just my analysis. My vote was my honest and sincere belief, but it was absolutely without any regard to irrelevance and without judging any opinion or vote to the contrary to my own, but I just wanted to let you know why I voted the way I did.
Chairman Elloway.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. Ladies and gentlemen of the body, I just want to thank the committee, but more so, I want to congratulate Matt Green for being a representative from House District 45. Would you all stand and give him a hand?
We are now at that order of business of reading standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 31, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, No, Davison. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 76, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to re-refer House Bill 31 to your committee number 2, Appropriations. This bill contains an appropriation.
Motion was to re-refer House Bill 31 to committee number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it's so ordered. Committee announcements. Chairman Elloway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Tuesday, January 18th, upon noon recess in House 18. We will take a look at House Bill 3, Liquor License Transfers, House Bill 98, Bar and Grill Liquor Licenses, and House Bill 137, Private Transfer Fee Obligations.
Chairman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning, Tuesday, January 18th at 7:30 a.m. to consider the following bills. House Bill 42, Coroner Record Confidentiality. House Bill 62, Wyoming Controlled Substances Act Amendments. House Bill 43, Workers' Compensation Appeals. House Bill 51, Industrial and Energy Development Protection.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment in room H-17 to consider the following bills. House Bill 50, Health Insurance Exchanges. House Bill 73, Dental Services Freedom Bill.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment tomorrow, Tuesday, January 18th. We will take up two bills, House Bill 22, Phased-in Fuel Tax Increase, and House Bill 33, Exceeding Speed Limit While Passing. And also, Mr. Speaker, I would like to remind the body that tomorrow, up in room 302, upon noon recess, there'll be an informational demonstration of the WildLink statewide public safety communication system, and a light lunch will be served. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately upon adjournment today in room 302 for consideration of House Bill 74, the validity of marriage. And don't forget, we are going to have our schooling on recalibration tomorrow at 8:30 in 302 and upon adjournment. Thank you.
Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. in room H-11 to consider House Bill 15, Weed and Pest Control, House Bill 8, Wyoming Traditional Food Act, House Bill 11, Wyoming Food Freedom Act, and House Bill 17, Raw Milk Committee. Note that earlier start time, 7 a.m. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. in room 302, where we will take up House Bill 101, Vicious Animals, Interference with Game Wardens, and House Bill 47, State Parks User Fee Program.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee 2 will continue with budget hearings promptly at 4 o'clock.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I begin by apologizing to the good representative from House District 13. Sometimes when we speak in hypotheticals, we get carried away, and I apologize for that. That was disrespectful, and I'm sorry. Brothers and sisters of the 61st, the people of Wyoming should be very proud. This afternoon was an example of our government at work. We had spirited, intelligent, and very critical debate, and you all did a marvelous job, and I can say I've never been more proud to be a member of a body. Now, with that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until tomorrow at 10 a.m. tomorrow, January 18th, 2011.
Before we vote on that motion, do you have a general file list?
Mr. Speaker, it will be distributed. We have the initial parts of it, but I just had 6 or 8 more bills to add to it.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion is approved. The House will be adjourned until tomorrow, January 18th, Monday at 10 a.m.